changing lanes.
Such a discipline existed, and it was change your brain, change your life. And that was the beginning of my new passion of bringing the world of neuroscience into recovery, wellness, and a well-being program.
Is there a different approach to recovery other than the 12-step program? My next guest, Dave Kenny, is the co-founder and executive director at Emergo Recovery, a private residential recovery and wellness center focused on brain-first approach specializing in actualized recovery. Dave Kenny next on Self-Talk Radio Show, brought to you by Pure Energy Apothecary, people and planet-friendly skincare. Find them at Bed Bath & Beyond or online at pureenergybody.com. Welcome to Self-Talk Radio Show. I'm Sarah Spencer. My guest is Dave Kenny. He is the co-founder and executive director at Emergo Recovery. It's a private residential recovery and wellness center focused on a brain-first approach, specializing in actualized recovery. Dave has dedicated his extensive career to helping individuals reclaim their life after struggles with addictions, anxiety, depression, and other debilitating challenges. Welcome to the show, Dave Kenny. Hi.
Hey, Sarah. It's great to be here.
How did you get involved with recovery?
Well, I'm 30 years in the field of education, and I really want to say that I'm more in the world of human performance, just helping people. And I've got a master's of ed and been working in the world of education, and in the last decade or so, been in the world of recovery and wellness. But that came out of a frustration, which I think a lot of times happens in this world. Things get created out of a need or a frustration. And when I was working at a private school in Canada, I saw good kids being excused and emotional behavioral problems, some addiction issues, academic issues. And I just fundamentally said, why can't we fix a brain? And then about 6 months later, I was traveling for the same school, and I was watching I go crazy when I'm traveling. You're going to find out I was watching a PBS show from the hotel while on the road, and listened to Dr. Daniel Amen, a neuropsychiatrist, and I never knew one such a discipline existed, and it was change your brain, change your life. And that was the beginning of my new passion of bringing the world of neuroscience into recovery, wellness, and a well-being program.
You have an interesting podcast. I was tuning in, and we'll put links to your podcast at the end of the show here. And one of the episodes you have is talking about the 12-step program and defining addiction. Can you go into that a little bit of what is the definition of addiction?
That's a great question, because there is no one definition.
Right.
And so it really depends on, you know, where you, the definition depends on where people start from. And the one thing, there's only one commonality. So most places, I'm a member of the ASAM, American Society of Addiction Medicine, the largest recovery and addiction medicine doctors and specialists in North America. And they've got a definition that talks about it being a brain disease. And it's about a functional issue and a circuitry issue in the brain. And then you've got other places that use the word disorder, but they still say it's a brain disorder. So you've got these two competing worlds. One says disease, one says disorder. Let's get together for a week and we'll still debate that. The one commonality is it's a brain function issue. So take a step back. If we have a liver issue or a kidney issue or a heart issue, we don't sit around in a group and talk about it, although lifestyle issues are important. We really want to see functionally how that organ is working and how can I improve or enhance its function. And the same thing with the brain. And yes, you can. What you have today doesn't have to be what you have tomorrow. So you can change your brain. And also, it is known that trauma drives a lot of addictions, which is pain. And pain and trauma reside in the brain. And so if I'm looking for relief, a substance is one of the fastest ways to do that. A cigarette, a drink, a marijuana, or an activity, gambling, because I get a great dopamine rush. And now iPhones or smartphones. So it is about the brain getting relief from pain. And there's other ways now we can do that.
So one of the things I noticed in one of your episodes, you were talking about the 12-step program and how what's wrong with the 12-step program? Why do people fail at it quite a bit?
Well, I won't say there's something wrong with it, but I will point out that it was created in 1935. Bill W. or Bill Wilson was one of the three founding fathers out of Ohio, and they came from a Christian group. And so the roots of 12-step come from a Christian group, and we didn't know anything about neuroscience in 1935, 1940. And so the evolution of science has changed. And so I believe there's a more effective approach. You can look online, but any legitimate study of AA programs show about 10 or 12% of the people 1 year later who have committed to the program 1 year later are still sober. That's not a good number. And actually, it mirrors the number of those people who do it at home and just say, I'm going to stop. I'm done. And so those success numbers mirror that. The fellowship of an AA group or of any group is a really good thing. And there is some benefit, even neurologically, there's benefit about a fellowship. But there's some other groups called Smart Recovery, Self-Management and Recovery Training, which uses cognitive behavioral therapy. So again, look at the evolution of psychology and neuroscience. Well, Smart Recovery is embracing some of that. And they're similar because there is a fellowship. And you go to these meetings, but you begin to learn about why I make the choices I make. And here's the big difference. A 12-step program says I am powerless over something. I don't believe people are powerless. I believe we have choice. But we have to understand why we make self-destructive choices, Sarah. You've got to see what the benefit of a self-destructive choice is to begin to make a new choice. And that's where Smart Recovery, cognitive behavioral therapy does begin to explore that. And it really sheds a new light. And it becomes empowering because that means the person has choice.
Wow. That just clicked my brain. I like that. So you're saying that, you know, with the 12-step program, the community is great. You know, having fellowship is great. However, giving your power away and being a moral failing, not so much. And it's actually a brain circuitry issue, correct?
Well, how would you like a family member to have a liver disease and you walk over and say, that's a moral failing, and I want you to go to this group over here, be anonymous, and talk in an anonymous way about your liver issue, and it's a moral failing. It's silly.
It really is.
And go back to the definition. If everybody is saying it's a brain issue, disease, disorder, but it's a brain issue, then that approach doesn't make any sense. Not with the science that we have today that shows what happens in a brain. And we can do some wonderful things. Neuroplasticity and neurogenesis. Neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to rewire. And neurogenesis is the brain's ability to grow new cells or new structure. So with those things, and there's some steps that people can do, but that means that what you have today is not what you have to have tomorrow.
We're speaking with Dave Kenny. He's the co-founder and executive director at Emergo Recovery. And when we come back, we're going to learn what Emergo Recovery is and also actualized recovery. We're going to talk about that when we come back on Self-Talk Radio Show. Think websites are old-fashioned, out of touch with your core audience? Think again. While your tribe may love you on Instagram, you may be missing out on a whole client base that searches for you on Bing or Google. Then what? WebHelp US built Self-Talk Radio Show's website, and I love it. Podcast uploads, open graph tags, SEO stuff, they do it all for me. WebHelp US, they even think of things like backing up my website, checking for viruses and stuff I frankly don't have time for. WebHelp US, professional websites for big picture people. WebHelpUS.com. Welcome back to Self-Talk Radio Show. I'm Sarah Spencer. My guest is Dave Kenny. Dave, tell me more about Emergo Recovery, what that is.
Emergo Recovery, we're a small, private recovery and wellness program, and I really want to stress more of the wellness. But we can recover from anything. And so we have a lot of people coming to us with all sorts of issues, and substance use issues and addiction issues, but also people with anxiety, depression, who are looking for lifestyle changes to overcome some of that. And we've created a program in that, you know, we've worked for 10 years, over 1,000 families I've had the great honor of working with in our team. And we've created Actualized Recovery. And Actualized Recovery is a brain-first approach to wellness, to recovery. But it's not a brain-only. So it's a brain-first. That's the, and that comes from Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs and self-actualization. And the bottom part of that pyramid, if you're familiar with it, the top part is where we all want to be, to live a self-actualized life. But the bottom part is physiological. It's how our bodies function. It's our, you know, we've got to be able to sleep and eat, and it's fulfilling those needs. And a lot of places miss this. So again, if the brain is in a dysfunction state, whether that's behavioral, whether that's feelings, whether that's anxiousness, whether that's an addiction issue, let's begin to do some things, food, exercise, sleep, maybe neurotechnology, to help the brain and change the brain. And then we get into, so that's the biological part of Actualized Recovery. Then there's a psychological component, and we do experiential learning there and therapies there. Love equine therapy and play therapy and emotional response therapy, CBT as well. Then there is a spiritual component. And I'm not talking religion. I'm talking about who a person is. What makes them tick? Do they love dance? Do they love music? What makes that smile genuine? So there's a spiritual component, connections. And connections are our relationships. And those are absolutely critical. And we do know, and there's some studies with rats that show this, that the more there's a connection, it actually enhances brain power. The brain gets bigger. And when I live, that's an enriched environment. When I live in an impoverished environment, it gets smaller.
Can you talk more about that experiment? You mentioned it on your podcast about the rat experiment and the special water.
Oh, there's a couple of them. I'll start with the first, if you'll let me, Sarah, with Dr.
Yeah, please.
Marion Diamond in the 60s. And
yes.
She was the first person credited with neuroplasticity, although she was laughed out of the room for about 3 decades because she was a woman in the 60s. Quite unfortunate. But she determined that when rats lived in an impoverished environment and by themselves in a cage, the brains actually shrank and got smaller and their lifespan shortened. And when a rat's lived in an enriched environment, and part of that was play and tunnels and touch by the handlers, some love, their brains got bigger. And that was groundbreaking in the 60s, because what we used to think is what we have, you got, and there's nothing you can do about it. And she discovered it's not true. So then there's another experiment using rats that was really the classic experiment in the world of recovery, which is, you know, addictions. So they put rats in a cage, one, and put some water, and then put morphine water. And the rats were given access to the morphine water or water. 9 out of 10 rats became highly addicted to the morphine water, and their lives were shortened, and they died. Bam. Morphine's addictive. Don't take morphine. 9 out of 10 rats killed themselves with this. Along came in the late 70s, early 80s, Dr. Bruce Alexander from British Columbia, Canada, looked at this and said, well, I think there's a little flaw here because we don't live in isolation. So he took Marion Diamond's work. He created an enriched environment. The cage was about 200 times the size. They had friends. They had tunnels. They had wheels. They had sex. And they had water and morphine water. Okay, let's see what happens. And lo and behold, they may have tasted it and drank it, but only 1 out of 10, the number was absolutely reversed, became anywhere near addicted, but didn't even die from it. So they became compulsive in using it. 9 out of 10 rats, in this case, in an enriched environment, did not touch it.
Hmm.
So now you tell me what we do with people in our families. We shun them and isolate them, and that's what we do certainly in the legal system and everything else. But in society, and we're finding that when people feel a connection, they have a purpose, and that their brains function differently, and they don't have the pain for, or the loneliness in the rat's case, to use the substance. There's no need for it because they are genuinely happy and their brains are functioning at a better rate.
Because there's choice. There's other things to choose other than the drug.
And, you know, I guess in the rat's case, that's happiness to them. And certainly in a human case, there's more to it about that, about having purpose, a sense of contribution. Those things are dramatically important. But also we hold on to trauma more than a rat does. And so there's some of that that we need to let go of. And so coaching, and I'm a big fan of recovery coaching and life coaching. I love smart recovery. But even just a coach works about where you're at today and moving forward. What do you want? So trauma happens to everybody. And therapy is about reviewing that and going back to that. And yet we know, I'm going to go back to my neuroscience here, Sarah. We do know that the more you talk about a traumatic event with emotion, a car accident, a rape, a sexual assault, the more you talk about it with emotion, the more the brain fires up, and the more it fires up, the more neurons fire, the stronger they wire. So we're embedding this trauma. I want to let it go. I want to reset things. And part of that is coaching from today and focusing on our future. And that's only part of it. Some of it is also using some technology that helps the brain reset from being in a state of imbalance.
So do you think that, you know, having therapy when you have a trauma, like you said, a rape or something along those lines, it's important to talk it out. But when do you know that you've hit the tipping point from, okay, I'm doing talk therapy and now I'm obsessing and all I'm doing is going to therapy and reliving my trauma? How do you move past that?
Sarah, there's a great book out there called The Power of TED, T-E-D, The Empowerment Dynamic. And to answer that question, first of all, I want to be real clear. If somebody needs to see a therapist or a specialist of any kind and they get relief from it, do it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so I want to be real clear with that. And, mm-hmm. and not everything works for every person. Everybody's unique. So people have to find what works for them. But to answer your question in generalities, in general terms, when people continue to relive a trauma as a victim, that's the problem. And because you don't have any, you're giving away all your power. And when you're a victim, then you still have a persecutor or something or somebody who did bad to you, or at least maybe true, maybe it's perceived. And then you've got rescuers. And it's a place where I don't have any control. I don't have any power. So in this case, you know, I've worked with a lot of women who have been sexually abused. And it's a terrible thing. And I have great compassion and empathy. And yet they sit in front of me 10 years later saying, I can't have a relationship. I can't move on. I don't trust anybody. And then the question is, what do you want? Well, I want a loving family and loving relationship. And I want that intimacy. I crave it. And the result is right now, or the fact is right now, that they're still giving power to their persecutor. They're still giving him or her that power, mm-hmm. and versus taking it back and taking steps forward in their life. I know I'm simplifying it a lot. The book, The Power of TED, is a tremendous book in helping people understand how you can move from being a victim to being a creator in your life. And when you begin to examine that and ask yourself, there's some great questions there. Carolyn Mace writes about this too, and there's three tips. If I'm blaming, if I'm complaining, or if I'm justifying, those are great tips about woundology. And woundology is about how people are trying to get well, but they're staying stuck in their wounds, or in The Power of TED, they're staying stuck as a victim. So it helps people to look at your role now in a very different light. It's a wonderful read. It's a weekend read, and it may help some people see things in a different light and become more empowered and a creator in your life.
Now, you are talking about Emergo Recovery and that you use smart recovery approach to addictions. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Smart recovery is really, it's for anything. It's just any self-destructive pattern or choice. And it's exploring and understanding why I make that. It's, first of all, the fundamental part is I have power and choice. I get to make a choice. Okay, if I have a drink, now that's going to lead to 10 drinks. That's where I lose total control. But I have power about my thought when I wake up. And am I going to check in with my thoughts and change my thoughts to create a different feeling, which creates a different action? So smart recovery helps us understand that. Some of the projects are about impulse control. Some of the projects are about my values and what do I value in making more long-term beneficial decisions instead of short-term ones, which short-term decisions, you know, eating a bowl of ice cream comes at a long-term cost. And so it's beginning to understand that I want to move more towards my compass. I want to move it towards making decisions that are based on my long-term wellness. But I would still say that people will struggle, will be hanging on by their fingernails with their willpower unless they look at their brain and brain function and begin to embrace a brain-healthy lifestyle.
Do you have some success stories you could share with us?
Gosh, yeah. I could think of a family came to us this year, and he's a 19-year-old. She's a surgeon and a medical doctor and a very renowned surgeon, and was losing her son and was losing him to drugs, alcohol, and gangs, and socially was really running in the wrong crowd. He was, just for privacy's sake, he was a very highly regarded athlete. I won't get into what sport, but had set Canadian records as he was growing up in his teen years. And then as things in his high school years began to fall apart, that left him. But he was being eyed for, potential Canadian Olympic team caliber athlete and good family. And all of a sudden, things just start falling apart. Well, as we got involved, we found out that he'd had suffered multiple concussions as a result of his sport. So his brain changed on him.
Oh, wow.
And the result was, when he was introduced to weed, that was the first drug, he got relief. He loved it. He didn't like it. He loved it because it changed how his brain was. But when that wore off, he's got to go get more and got to go get more. And then all of a sudden, all of the behaviors and patterns and dropping out of school, he ended up being involved and nearly lost his life twice with gang-related things, and came to us in a pretty broken state, wanting help but didn't believe that there was any help for him. Everything was going to be a failure. So part of it was giving him some hope. And you do that by talking about brain. This isn't about he's a bad kid. It's not a bad kid. I don't believe in that. I believe people make bad choices, but I believe in greatness in people, and there's a reason why he was making bad choices. And as we put it together, we went right back to almost the day of his first couple concussions. There's a couple that happened in him very quickly. I don't think the first concussion had properly healed from that. And so as we began this brain healthy program, there was some anger at times and there was a few other outbursts at times, but you know, we continued and forced through that with him. And the result right now is he's completed his education this fall, has completed it. Is completing it right now as we speak, is about to finish that, has held down a full-time job at the same time, and has been training again with his old team. They've welcomed him back. And athletically, the word is that he has potential to still make very high level in his sport of choice. And the other thing, too, from a family point of view, he has a sibling. It's the first time his sister has talked to him in over a year, year and a half. And they now have a relationship. So I'm very proud of him. The parents also had to go through a lot of coaching as well. And there's a lot of that in our coaching, in our program too, for families, because we have to look at and explore our environment, and we have to do some things differently as well.
That's interesting. You know, you mentioned that he had a concussion and how adversely that injury can impact you. What about sleep apnea? I was wondering, I read an article just the other day about a child that would act up in school and misbehave and had all these behavioral issues, and they learned that he would always be breathing through his mouth all the time. And they were theorizing that maybe he had sleep apnea and it was stopping him from getting a good night's sleep, and that they diagnosed him with ADD and instead it was a sleep disorder. Have you seen any misdiagnoses like that?
Well, I'm going to be careful because I'm not a sleep apnea specialist. I'm not, there could
right.
be a lot of things. There could be from, as you're talking, I'm going off in my head. Maybe I would get his nose and breathing checked out there, that sometimes, and there's obstructions there that cause people to breathe through their mouth more than their noses. So yeah, you know, I would encourage that family to explore those things. But I do know that sleep is regulated also by a brain. And so sleep apnea can also be a weight issue, as I understand it to be as well. But sleep in general is regulated by the autonomic nervous system, by the brain. And so there are some things we can do to, we need 7 or 8 hours of sleep every night. You can't get away from that. Don't try and be a hero. And if you cut short on sleep, you don't get to cram it in on the weekends and rebuild it. It doesn't work that way. When you don't get sleep, it does add stress. And it actually, whether you're getting ready for a presentation or an exam or an interview, sleep is the most important thing you can do in a short-term basis to be prepared for tomorrow's big day. That and nutrition and movement. Those would be the three things. But there are some things sleep hygiene-wise, Sarah, like, for example, the last hour before bed, if you want to go to bed at 10, set your alarm tonight at 9. Then set an alarm at 9 o'clock. And when it goes off, then you start to prepare for bed. You shut things down. Your phones, your tablets, and TVs come off. If you have to watch something or into something, put on good blue light glasses, because blue light actually changes our brain. And because as blue light comes into our eye, it goes to the back part of our brain, and it tricks our brain. Our brain thinks it's sunrise, and so we stop producing natural melatonin.
So we're
waking ourselves up with our phones and tablets. And actually, we joke about it. If you want to wake up in the morning, stare at your phone for 5 minutes, because your brain becomes more alert. I don't recommend it. It's more of a joke, but... But it certainly is not something that you want to do to prepare for sleep. So take that last hour, make it a sacred hour, turn some lights off, do your pre-bath bedroom routine, and have a PM routine. Because in a week or so, you're sending a message to your brain, and we're preparing for sleep, not another three more emails. And then when you lay down at 10 o'clock, stay down. Your brain is actually cleansing itself at night and getting rid of toxins at night, kind of flushing itself out. Even when we're pseudo light sleeping, I have an Aura ring, and they're amazing. AURO, an Aura ring, and they're amazing. We've tried all sorts of sleep technology. This is. You know, it sits on my finger. I charge it twice a week, and you can turn off the Wi-Fi, but the Bluetooth on it, and then you can turn it on in the morning, and it downloads it to my phone, and I can see my sleep patterns. And my sleep patterns are very. People don't understand how much you go into a deep sleep, a REM sleep, a light sleep, all night long. You go between these. It is not that you go to bed and you're conked out. And alcohol does not enhance the sleep. It actually makes sleep worse. You don't get the deep, restful, restorative sleep with alcohol.
Interesting. How do we work with you at Emergo Recovery?
Give us a call. Send us an email. I'd love that.
Now, even though you're in Canada, do you take U.S. People as well?
You bet. We've got some right now with us. And also we do coaching as well. So if that's something that helps people, we can do a coaching program where you typically use Zoom or sometimes Skype, but typically Zoom and or by phone.
Nice.
And so, even the Amen clinics recommend and send people to us. They do a wonderful job at more of the diagnostic and imaging, but sometimes people need more of an intervention. And so they come here. We have a couple programs too. We We have a tour of 3-week executive wellness program. So a great example is we had a lawyer being called to the bench to become a judge, and she came and joined us for, I think it was 12 or 13 days, because she felt that she was drinking a little bit too much wine and wanted to just sharpen things a little bit. And so she invested in herself for 2 weeks in here, and we did a lot of the brain stuff and other coaching, and really just kind of sharpened her saw a little bit. So we have executive and wellness programs, as well as then the 4 to 6 week recovery programs.
Do you have to have an addiction in order to utilize the services of Emergo Recovery?
No, most people don't.
That is really neat.
When we started 10 years ago, 90% of the people had a substance abuse or addiction issue. Now we're probably 30%. Most people coming to us, sleep, anxiety, depression, concussion, PTSD issues are the number one thing. Sometimes they're using a substance as a result of that.
Dave Kenny, he is the co-founder and executive director at Emergo Recovery. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Sarah, it's a pleasure. I love your questions. I've had a lot of fun visiting with you, and I hope that some of the tips are helpful for the people that listen to your show.
Oh, extremely. And we'll have links to both your podcast and your website at selftalkradioshow.com. Thanks so much for being on.
You rock, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
I'm Sarah Spencer for Self Talk Radio Show. If you're a fan of Self Talk Radio Show, head out to our Facebook page, take a picture of yourself listening to the show, and you could win yourself a $25 gift card courtesy of Pure Energy Apothecary or one of our guests or sponsors. Thank you so much for listening to Self Talk Radio Show, Mind Changing Radio, where you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and of course at selftalkradioshow.com.